Well, good. Keep trying your toes.
Yeah.
Just what you need, but.
Nothing too bad. Seems like my last letter to our gear storage holders might have hit home, so they're actively out there trying to get as much stuff cleaned up as possible.
That's good.
And we've been getting a lot of help from Pack Choice since they don't have any workers left over. They got like 5 people, I think, working over there now. And so they don't have much to do, so they've been kind of helping move people's gear, piling up piles of garbage for us to get rid of, but help regardless.
Richard, you can start the meeting whenever you are ready.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm trying to check.
Oh, you're just fine. Joe's walking in anyways, so you're good.
Okay, so we will call this meeting to order. This is a special commission meeting of the Port of Richmond Harbor Commission, Wednesday, April 17, 2024. And we'll call the meeting to order and do a roll call.
Larry?
Here.
Dan?
Here.
Sharon?
Here.
Joe?
Here.
Richard?
Here. Are there any modifications, additions, or changes to the agenda?
No.
Anybody need to declare a potential conflict of interest?
No.
Sorry, I got to add that.
That's fine.
Okay. Entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
I make a motion to approve the agenda.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yeah.
Richard?
Yeah. That brings us to board practices assessment with SCAO. Roy? Henry, welcome.
Thank you.
Do you want to introduce this?
I'll let you do the introduction.
Thank you to the board for the opportunity to facilitate your board practice and assessment. And so this afternoon's kind of how this is going to flow will be introductions. What is the board practice assessment? We'll go over the board practice process, next steps, and then executing the board practice assessment. And so for me, my name is Roy Emery. I work for Special Districts Association. I've worked for them since I retired in July of 2019. I have 40 years in the fire service, so public safety background, paramedic, things like that. And I've done several dozen of these. I've even done a port. I did the port of Newport, so that was very interesting for me. And so we'll go through this. We'll take hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes. It kind of depends on the discussion that goes on. I kind of facilitate that to keep us on time. So forgive me if I cut somebody off a little bit, but it's to get us out of here in a decent time. And so to start off with for me is we can just go down the rank of officers and then the at-large board members. Introduce yourself to me, how long you've been on the board, and why are you serving? So we'll start with you.
Are you familiar with the past history of this port?
No.
Okay, so in 2018, the port commission at that time fired the port manager, and a recall petition was initiated, and 4 of the 5 were either resigned or recalled, leaving the port with no way to pay bills, leaving the port with one commissioner. So there was a big scramble statewide to figure it out, and so the ultimate consequence was the county commissioners were authorized to appoint 2 people to the commission, and then they in turn would have a quorum now, and yep, they could appoint 2 more. So that's how I got here, since I was appointed by the county commission. So I've been here since 2018, and it's a great place to work.
Thank you.
Joe Spear. I came in right behind Richard and Ken Grange. They were appointed, and they appointed me, along with Roy Davis, I do believe, too. And I was around 18, right after these guys.
Okay. And the reason why?
What's that?
The reason why you wanted to?
I've been here for 50 years, so.
Get back to the community?
I've been commercial fishing for 46, so.
Okay.
That was the reason.
Okay.
That's where I wanted me to join.
I didn't give you a reason. So the reason why I wanted to come here is I'm a recreational fisherman.
Okay.
And I work on a lot of fish issues. And I realized that all the work I was doing would matter not at all if we didn't have access to the ocean.
Absolutely.
And so the ports provide the access. So when this all happened, I thought, okay, it's time. So I went and got another commercial fisherman, Ken Raines, and I said, let's see if we can get on this thing. So that's how.
Okay.
That's the background.
I can understand the recreational fisher background because my boat's in Newport. So, Sharon?
I can't really tell you when I started because I was appointed and then I ran, but then one of the commissioners that was on the recall list had taken my spot. And then after that, I ran and I'm back on the board again. I love this port. I've been fishing out of here since 79, and my dad was a commissioner here in the 80s. And I think that our port is very important, not only to the fishing, but we have a lot of tourists that like to come and visit the port as well. And it helps with the stability for our tenants and people with businesses. I mean, it has to thrive, and I want to see it remain for the next generation.
Larry?
Larry Jonas, sport fisherman. I think I've been on the board three, possibly going on my fourth year. Give back to the community, big supporter of community support, and I'll make sure the port stays here and stays in good condition.
Dan Frazier, last October, August, or actually July, one of the deals that had been appointed with Richard, Ken Raines resigned and left a vacancy. And being a retiree, I thought, what the heck, I can give something back of my time. I have commercial fished and recreational fished out of this harbor since about 1972, which is almost my entire life, and I thought I can do something for it. With a little bit of knowledge that I have of this place, and figured why not.
Okay. And so then you got hired 2018, 2019, or?
I originally started working here in 2010.
Okay.
I moved here. I really didn't know what I was going to do here. I got a job here at the port, started doing bathrooms and garbages, and continued on, and then went to operations supervisor. And then around 2017, I was appointed the harbor master's position, and then 2018. And then after our manager left a year and a half ago now, about a year and a half ago, I took over the role as port manager while we were seeking other applications for a port manager, and ultimately ended up taking the position about a year ago, maybe almost about a year ago.
Cool.
Yeah. I'm here because I really like this job. It's fun. There's lots of people, always different things to do. Before that, I did construction, and it is not a very good lifelong job to be successful at. So this has turned out to be a good job for me to settle into.
Awesome. And then April?
April Walker. I have been here since May of 2018, and I started out at the front office doing mortgages for customers, new and renewals. In December of 22, around the same time that the old port manager left, the financial advisor / office manager, she left as well. So I applied for the change in position so that I could bring the knowledge I had learned from my other spot to my new spot and not leave everybody high and dry with someone who didn't know what was going on. So here I am.
Cool. Ms. Danielle?
I have been with the port since 2015, working 9 years. I've started at the front desk, worked in the RV park, I did the events, done outside stuff. I've been everywhere around here. I loved this place. I loved working here. I loved the employees and the commissioners that we have now are great. I've been working with the commissioners for most of my time here. I think the first 2 years I kept in the office, and then from there on I've been working with the commissioners.
Awesome. A lot of caring and support for what you do. That's really good to hear. For the board practice assessment, it's a facilitated assessment by the board members to rate the effectiveness of your governance practices. So there's an assessment tool that should be in your packet that's color-coded and stuff, and we'll go through the six areas, and we'll have a discussion on how you feel you're doing in those areas. And because I come from a public safety background, it has to be simple. So green is good, red is bad, yellow is caution. Pretty simple to keep it that way. This underscores the performance between board performance and risk management. And so good practices lead to good risk management. Concern can lead to some risk concerns. So this is, we're going to identify strengths and weaknesses and opportunities. And at the end of this discussion, I take notes all the way through this. I will summarize our discussions and how you rated yourself. I will send a draft to the president and to the court manager for their comments. If you're happy with that, that's the assessment. And then you'll hear from me 60 days after that to see if you've discussed it in your board meeting. And that's it. The absolute worst case scenario, which I do not expect to happen here today, is some of the times I work for SDAO. The other side of SDAO is SDIS, the insurance. You're doing this because it gives you a discount on your insurance. That's one of the incentives for doing this. But sometimes I have to recommend risk management to put somebody on a watch list because it's pretty dysfunctional. And so that's the other reason why we come in. And so that's a real hard assessment to write. So, but it does happen out there. And you saw it happen in 2018 here. Dysfunctionality happens.
True.
And so that process is, yes, the county commissioners do come in. They appoint to get you to three. And hopefully those three individuals can fill out the rest of the board. Sometimes that doesn't work and it goes back to the county again to do the other two. So I've done a couple dozen of these. SBAO as a whole has probably done 170 of these board practices now. And so it's not a new thing. This is your session, and we'll discuss the state of the district in a candid and thoughtful discussion. Staff is here to support background. And I'm the facilitator, just help us get through this. Ground rules are simple. Everybody's equal, no right or wrong answers. And we'll stay on the key performance areas in the assessment tool, and I'll try and keep us on time. Okay? And if anybody needs a break, just let me know, and we can stop and break.
Okay.
And so we'll get started. And so the first key performance area comes under board duties and responsibilities. And the sub-areas in that are adherence to standards of good stewardship. And that refers to the public's trust in the board for responsible, prudent management of assets, resources, and providing reliable service to the district. So as a board, how do you feel you're doing as stewards of the public trust? Anybody can?
I think we do very well.
And why is that?
Well, because we're all very honest. We respect the duty that we do for the public and for the financial situations that our port has gone through. We strive to improve it daily.
Do you have a master plan? or a strategic plan?
We have a strategic plan, yes. And it is regularly updated. And our five-year plan is about ready to get renewed again. So I think we got a year and a half. No, tenure, right? Tenure.
Awesome.
I think we do a good job because Richard runs this board very well when he's at a meeting. Besides, it's all working together very well. Richard's very thorough. Like when I run it, I'm like, Roy. And when Richard runs it, if there's someone in the audience that doesn't know what's going on, I think he picks up on it and he explains it to the audience what's going on and stuff. So everyone knows, you know, what's going on during the meeting. Or if they haven't been here a month ago or so and we're talking about this project and Richard will bring it out that, by the way, you know.
Here's the background.
Yeah, I think that's probably the biggest one is that, you know, when there's questions or something, it's not necessarily just a yes or no. It's yes and here's why. Or no and let me explain myself on where it's coming from. And, I, you know, quite frankly, I think everybody up here comes with their own opinions and their own, you know, idea of how they feel about it. And I think it's communicated well about what each person is thinking and giving the reasons why and not so much just a yes and no answer.
Cool. So you give yourselves a green in that area?
Yes.
So I'll be asking this all the way through. I'll be asking the colors. Sometimes it'll be green and yellow. Sometimes it'll be yellow and red. So.
Let me add a little bit to the discussion.
Sure.
So, Joe mentioned that I'm a big guy for the record. So I want to make sure that when we're doing something that we get stuff on the record properly. And we also have been fortunate in that we've been able to run meetings that are structured, but we're kind of informal in terms of the public participation. They have an opportunity for public comment, but we'll talk and then, you know, once we're kind of gelling what we're doing, we'll let them raise their hand and ask questions. We don't shut them off, assuming their behavior warrants that. But we haven't had many issues like that. So I think we try and keep this really down low. We're not real highly formal. We aren't, you know, call out Robert Earl's order and those sorts of things. We just kind of make it work and flow naturally. And so I think that's helpful to people who are sitting in the audience. The one dilemma we have is we can't get anybody here. Dan was our most dependable attendee, and then we went into the board, so now we're back to two or three that'll show up. And we have no newspaper that covers us, so, you know, we're doing our best to let the public know what's going on, but unless there's a major controversy, we don't understand.
Sea Lions haven't moved back in yet?
No, they're gone. So.
You know, with that being said, these commissioners that we have are really active, I guess, and really well known throughout the community. So, you know, a lot, some don't come here, you know, people don't come here, but the questions about things don't stop coming to them. You know, they answer, field a lot of questions, explanations of what does happen in a board, and so, they do retain everything we're doing and kind of in an informal way, not in a meeting, are still able to reach out to the people and give them information that comes from the meeting.
I do get a lot of people, a lot of comments from the public, and not just because I shot sea lions with paintballs with a wrist rocket, but I do get a lot of comments about from people about what's going on and why are we doing this or whatever. So there's a lot of openness between the board and the community, and it's not just in this room that happens. So that helps a lot with that. And to Richard's point, I also sit on another commission here in the area, and this is not unnormal or not abnormal to have nobody in attendance. The other commission, we're lucky the only time we get someone to show up is if they got an issue with the water deeds, and then then you, as soon as they're done, they're out the door. We're left with just those who are on the board and the office manager, so.
Yeah, I agree.
The other thing that I think is important, and I've been very appreciative of this, is in almost every case, when we make a decision here, we all own it. There's no, you know, coming around from behind just saying, well, I didn't like that, but he made us do that, or we did that this way. I have never had that experience, and I think that's important for how this board functions, because we don't
Absolutely. You can disagree and everything, but when the vote happens, the majority prevails and everybody supports. That's really important.
I think I'd like to mention one more thing. The board's got an excellent staff that brings things to us.
Right.
So everyone understands what's going on. So I think that really helps a lot, too.
And demonstration of good governance practices refers to the board's ability to function effectively as the policy-making overseer. How do you feel you're doing in terms of your overall performance as a board? And do board members have a common understanding of their roles and responsibilities? In a way, you've answered that. I think you've addressed roles and responsibilities and very serious about your responsibility to the port and to keep people here and businesses here and recreation here and to provide as good a facility and service as you can. That's kind of what I heard in your bios and what everybody's desire is, right?
I think to that note, you know, this by far, in my 14 years, is the best operating board that I've seen, that I've had to work with. And all of us, I think, here have seen the opposite side of that. You know, we've had boards that do not get along, don't do things properly, and that negative outlook that comes from boards not being on the same page, not, you know, playing by the rules that are set out for what they're supposed to do, has proved itself not to work. I think everybody here, like I said, knows their what their role is here, and nobody here is as above or below, you know, maintaining to those practices. We as staff aim to be as good as we possibly can. Meeting packets follow, you know, and also branching out and looking at what other places do, determining what's good, what's bad, what works, what doesn't work. And we try to bring all the good practices back here so we can apply them, because I think everybody kind of wants to hold ourselves and the Port of Brookings to the standards that we do things right, to the best of our ability.
Well, Travis, I think you do a lot for us because you have an open door policy. If we don't understand something, if we have a question on something, we're welcome into your office at any time. You sit there, you tell us what it is that we don't understand, and then we have conversations over that, all of us, so that we can all reach the right decisions for making policies work or what support is in need of.
The other thing that I think is a great feature of this board is they understand the difference between policy and operations. So we aren't out there riding these people's tail all day saying, hey, you need to get over there and take care of that, or you should be, that's not our responsibility. I think we all understand that, and I think we've been pretty good about staying in our lane and not getting over on that side where we don't belong.
That's really big. I was going to comment on one of the things that can tend to cause a lot of confusion are federal mandates and rules that come down that you're subject to for pollution and things like that. So those can get complicated pretty quick.
And they are not getting any easier.
No, it's not meant to be easy. It's an onion. It has things that are just on and on and on.
Yes, and the onion's getting bigger.
Yeah.
the layers are getting more and more, but, you know, that's part of being able to keep up with, you know, what's going on out there, what the rules and regulations are, and making sure that we do all of our homework so when we come back to a public meeting, I mean, most of our job when we come back to this public meeting is to give them as much of the information, the proper information, so they can make the best informed decision.
Exactly.
And we've also made a couple of staffing moves that I think helped in that arena, in that we have a fellow that's pretty much directed to do a lot of the oversight on some of these projects so that it doesn't all fall on one manager, and I think that's helpful. That was really, I thought, a strategic move that helped us, because we're deep into FEMA.
Yeah, it's,
all the other.
It's a specialist category.
Yeah.
And so it's hard, you know, for a port manager or any executive to, one, do fulfill that responsibility, then two, have this big loudspeaker of all these federal mandates coming down, unfunded federal mandates coming down.
Yeah.
All the time, and it's constantly changing, and it's just this din all the time coming in, and having to do that for one person is almost an impossible task. So, very good. Any other comments on that? I'm assuming green. You guys are great. So we get into operational compliance now. And operational compliance has three subcategories. And so the first subcategory here is overall regulatory compliance and timeliness of compliance reporting. And so that's kind of what we were just talking about a little bit. Is this refers to the board district's ability to comply with laws, rules, and regulations, protocols, expectations that impact the organization. So how comfortable are you as a board with your district's track record and current status and regulatory compliance? How do you know you're compliant? I assume you get a report.
I do.
Okay. And so what kind of information comes along with that report?
So the it's constant, you know, it's mm-hmm. every different area you're working for, you know, regulatory compliance. I guess that would be, you know, from scheduling complete reports, payroll tracking, updating things, constant updates, bringing back policies to the board, you know, that are updated, that need to be updated. We get a lot of that, you know, SDAO training is worth its weight in gold. Yeah. You know, it's very helpful.
Easy, complicated, new law change that came in is, what is it, Oregon paid leave.
Oregon paid leave.
Perfect example.
Yep, Oregon paid leave. That's one that, you know, we've already had employees take advantage of that.
Yep.
That might be the right word. Utilize
the benefit. Utilize
the benefit. And it, you know, complying with that, making sure that April's got to do turn in whatever payroll stuff she has to do. But then on top of that is compensating for the not having the employee, you know, here and making sure that everybody's kind of cross-trained in multiple things. So the compliance doesn't falter when you lose one employee, which is a very difficult thing to do, especially when you run into organizations with less staff, less ability to transfer that around. I think we're fortunate enough to have employees that have been here for, you know, a significant amount of time. We have very few, very low turnover rate, if really any at all, for like the last 5 years. So having, you know, established employees that have that know, and the training that we've got, our previous port manager was excellent at unearthing these things, finding out where we weren't compliant at, and over the last 5 to 7 years, really 7 years almost, I mean, we have made leaps and strides at compliance, making sure that every construction contracts, FEMA contracts, board policies, you know, down to even our meeting packets, that all the proper information is on there. It's easy to find. It's easy to read. You know, it's been a long road. We weren't as good at it. Mm-hmm. You know, 10, 15 years ago, we were not as well informed, or the board as well informed as what they should have been on a lot of compliance and regulatory things. And I think a lot of that stems from the want and drive from the staff to do the right thing, you know, not trying to find a side street, you know, an easy way out. This is what it requires. So dig in and go through every step, hit every checkbox, and make sure that what we're turning in to people as complete as we can possibly do.
If we need a special meeting to sign any contracts or move forward with things, this board is very understanding with, yes, let's get it done, let's get our meetings going so we can move forward as quickly as we can.
Yeah, not delaying, not putting things off, not waiting till the last minute, you know, to get the things done. You're as best as that we can. There's definitely things that ride right up on the timeline, but, you know, making sure that if you know you're not going to be able to comply with it, that you notify the proper agency, whatever it is, let them know. And, you know, communication with the regulatory offices, even our board, you know, if something's not going to land on the date that we said it's going to, this is why, this is what I'll have it done, and making sure that you stick to what you say you're going to do.
Okay, cool.
So in terms of, you asked, how do we know? Because we've been asked that question in a couple of different ways. Well, how do you know they're not spending money they shouldn't be spending, and those sort of things. So if you look at this package we've got for the meeting today, so we have a management report, which details everything that's happened in the month, including a lot of the work orders and things that are done. We have an environmental security report that talks about, so here's the testing we had to do for stormwater drainage, that kind of stuff. So we hear about that every month if necessary. And then we have a really complete financial report, which takes you down to every checklist if you really want to go to that level. So we have a pretty good idea every month of what's going on. And so the person that asked me the question, well, how do you know they did that? So I can walk out and look at it. You know, they told me they were going to do this. So they wrote a check for this, and there it is. So there's no surprises. And I think that these folks have gone to an extreme length to make sure that that's all documented and that it's clear and it's in the package. So it's on the public record. There's no hidden agenda. There's no stuff going on under the table. It's all right there in front. And so that's what I see as the operational compliance piece of this, is that we've got that information right at our fingertips.
That's excellent. And that's a very good transparency practice for folks, that they can see that and see how business is conducted. Part of this question gets to, again, the federal government or state government are all really good at coming up with new rules for us to follow. And so as a board member, we don't know those rules. And so paid leave was a pretty complicated thing to implement. And so as a board member, you wouldn't know anything about it until your executive comes to you and say, oh, the state's come up with this new idea, and here's what the impact is going to be to our organization. And so now we're going to have to count things this way. And, oh, by the way, that's probably going to cost us an extra $30,000. And so we're going to have to find that in our budget when we go through the budget process the next time. And that's where those unfunded mandates come down, is it's all going to come down to when you're making the next budget that you're going to have to take from this to make that happen, because legal compliance is not an option. It's, you got to do it. And so that derails something that you were planning on doing as an improvement, or delays it from going on. And so those are the unknown things that rain down. And when you have a good, positive relationship, again, there's enough notification for the questions of, okay, explain paid leave to me again. Because I had to hear the explanation on Oregon paid leave like a dozen times before it really set in my head. do you have more than 25 employees? Do you have less than 25 employees? Here's how all this stuff works.
Contributing, not contributing.
Correct.
Well, in a positive way, it's unfortunately we deal with that almost every meeting. Something comes in that says, well, we plan on doing this, but guess what? We've got to do this.
Flexibility.
Yep. I think a lot of it boils down to we have staff is just incredible. I mean, like you just said, everything goes to them first, and they bring it to us. We mill it around, make decisions, whatever we need to do. But if something changes, they let us know. It doesn't have to be in a meeting. We'll get an email or text, hey, this is going on. We need to address this. The staff is just outstanding. When I started, I tried to keep on top of it, and I could. It's impossible. I try not to be complacent, still keep an eye on it, but as Richard said, you can look at our packet, anything they do, it's down to the penny, the minute, the second, whatever needs to be done. And if we need an extension on anything, well, we're going to have to get an extension. We're not going to meet. Travis still says that. I know we're not going to make this. We need to file for an extension. Here's the process. We just say yes or no.
Here's another agenda example. So today, under informational items, we're getting an update on our dredging, FEMA dredging project, an EPA time extension, HMGP, what is that?
Hazard mitigation grant update.
Infrastructure need grant opportunities and Basin 3 dock adjustments. So we're going to hear about all that. It's not a decisional thing for us, but it's
information,
and a lot of times it will then lead to, and by the way, remember we talked about this, now we're going to have to go do this. So there's, from my perspective here, there's just no surprises, and that's the way we like it.
Yeah. Thank you.
We'll go green in that area. And so now we move on to potential challenges, and that gets to some of the things that we've talked about, stiffer regulations, requirement upgrades in the harbor, employment law changes, God forbid another pandemic. So this is what looks at the district's preparedness for dealing with these possible challenges that would happen. And so what changes do you see coming that may pose a challenge for you, and how are you prepared to deal with them? Because one side is on the docking side, you can raise fees, but there's only so far before people are on the phone to you that was unreasonable, you know? And so there's a balance on raising fees, but you still have to do maintenance on everything. Not everybody is really nice around the docks and keeping things clean and tying their boat up and taking care of things.
So compliance is getting, like you said, it's getting more difficult and more difficult and more difficult. The issues that the port runs into is that we pay a lot of money in debt. There's $500,000 a year that goes to just paying our debt. That's $500,000 being spent in debt and not in infrastructure upgrades, maintenance, you know, those things to do. So, you know, by being creative, planning ahead, you know, asking questions, utilizing it, a lot for the funding challenges we run into and how we're going to compensate for that is usually not stemming from an idea we have here. It's from many trips up and down the coast, looking at other ports, talking to other people, board members in particular. I mean, everybody sitting here has had the pleasure of going to multiple different ports, you know, and seeing a lot of different things and gathering as much of that information as we can and seeing what works with what we, you know, what we're actually trying to apply here. Sometimes, well, a lot of times it results in a Band-Aid over what it is, but that also is where those Band-Aids are things that we know we need to be looking in the future for more funding, seeking funding, and what that's kind of shaping up to look like to comply. And I think compliance, you know, also comes with making sure your staff's trained, making sure you have people in the positions that are held responsible for those compliance challenges and issues that we have. and making sure that you get a detailed report back to make sure that, you know, these things are being addressed and figuring out what you're not able to address and finding solutions to. I might have went off on a tangent there.
No, good.
We typically, over the years that I've been here, rely a lot of our infrastructure upgrades and things we have stemmed from disasters, FEMA, mm-hmm. You know, and other types of grants and things that happen around us. Making sure you have staff and people in place to help you navigate that, you know, engineers, consultants, you know, making sure that you're hiring and putting people in places that can relay that information and actually apply it.
Well, and I have a pretty good sense that the port staff have their own system of checks and balances. I don't think April does a budget in a vacuum. I think there's a lot of discussion that goes on, so they're kind of, for all intents and purposes, just double checking and triple checking to make sure that things are in the right place and that we're meeting all our compliance with all the audits and all the stuff that goes with it. So that's just my sentiment from hanging around the office when they'll let me come in and bother them. But
yeah, as far as our office staff goes and how I typically operate, I don't know everything by any stretch of the imagination, but I have a team of staff that between all of us, we do know. So budgets, reviews of stormwater control, you know, pollution control plans, all that always stems from four of us sitting at a table and discussing line by line, you know, everything that needs to be updated, changed, and gathering information from everybody's different expertise on what it is to and putting together a package what everybody has, because one person to be able to say, no, this is the way it is, I think is a stretch to say you're going to capture it all without some help from your staff.
Mm-hmm. It also works with next person up idea, because not everybody's here all the time, and so there's better continuity in the organization the more people that understand what's going on.
Right.
And it really helps with succession planning.
Yeah, one of what I really kind of live by is that good, bad, or otherwise, everybody needs to know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, everybody needs to be on the same page. Might not always be the easiest conversation or the easiest thing to talk about, but having everybody on board and stating it as a group, you can't really misconstrue what was said when you say it in a group. You know, if everybody leaves, you know, and somebody's out there saying something that wasn't said in here, I don't really see that happening. What's said in here and then what comes out of here or in our office, you know, that's what we say what it is. And it's transparency, I guess, it's just making sure everybody is on the same page, good, bad, or otherwise.
Well, and I agree that we're not being told what they think we want to hear. We're being told this is what it is, and we see that delivered. And that's important.
Well, I mean, being provided with all the information in a transparent manner helps you develop the most effective policy for the port. So, that's all. So we go green on that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So organizational resilience is how prepared is the organization to respond and recover from an extreme event? So you can talk economic downturn, you can talk tsunami, you can talk whatever. Is honestly, how prepared are you?
I think we're a poster child for that, having gone through a recall and lost staff and rebuilt from that in the manner that has, I think, strengthened this place remarkably well. You know, I think we've, in several instances, we've demonstrated our resilience, and one of them was losing a port manager, losing a budget director almost simultaneously, and the staff figured out here, this is what we need to do, and everybody jumped in together and helped out and got us through that. People stepped forward within the staff and said, listen, may not be a job I really want, but if you'll give it to me, I'll take it. And they've done that, and it's been very effective for us. So we have a small bench, but when we had a crisis, they stepped up. And I think that's helped us through an awful lot of bumps. In fact, I think this last transition, I always tell these guys, I think it was seamless. I hardly noticed any difference changing both the port manager and the finance. I know they didn't feel that, but we did.
Well, I think that most of that transition went smooth because of the work that was put in prior to us, which paved the way. It wasn't a foreign language to us. We already had, you know, an agenda set out that we liked. We had a way that we wanted to get our actions item across that historically has worked. And, you know, being able to just pick back off from good habits helps a lot. And as well as, I just can't say it enough, is key, our staff that stays here. You know, we don't have a high turnover rate. So if you're trying to reteach somebody how to do meeting minutes, you know, a year after year because you have a new person, things are going to falter.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with finance. You know, and I think in our organization, everything's pretty wide open. So it's cross-training, making sure everybody else knows has been a huge step forward in being able to, like I said, when people aren't here, for somebody else to come in and pick it up and have a relatively good roadmap for them to follow.
Okay. So let me ask this a little differently. What keeps you awake at night that could happen to this port that would impact the ongoing operations?
From my perspective, losing staff would be a big deal. There are other things that are hard to quantify. I mean, we could have, we've had a tsunami, so we figured that one out. That was before we got here. But
the virus on 199 impacted us quite a bit last year.
Oh, you bet.
Sure.
It did, but they worked around it.
We're
okay.
You know, we have done a pretty good job of starting to budget things to a point where we have our reserves are in better standing. You know, not always bringing our budget right down to the wire, you know, leaving some room in it for incidentals, things that we're not necessarily prepared for. On the bigger end, we're kind of starting to experience it right now, is that there's no, that our processing plant, Pacific Seafood, is not buying shrimp this year here. So that means that our bigger boats, our fishing fleet is leaving. They're still having their moorage here, but we won't have any boats here. That's going to result in landing fees, other boats coming here for transit fees, fuel dock, you know, and overall moorages. We're going to see that this year. But being able to compensate for that is knowing, being engaged with your tenants, knowing the potential problems that are coming. And when you're looking at your budget and you're planning for the next year, you know, taking those things into consideration and, you know, being somewhat conservative in a point at a time when there is a potential serious impact of what could mm-hmm. affect your operation.
Yeah, that's a great example. It's like a fire district. One of the districts I've worked with by Corvallis, long-term lumber mill shut down. And so lots of revenue for them.
Mm-hmm.
And as a district, you know, things like that greatly, especially for primarily volunteer organizations, that's a big hit. So
yeah.
How are you going to recover from that?
I think it's trying to see it coming the best that you can. You know, I mean, there's some things that you're just not going to see coming. But for the most part, if you are engaged with what's happening in your community, what's happening in the state, and even up to a national and world level, you can kind of see things starting to turn and making sure that you're not completely oblivious to what's happening out there. And not necessarily making major adjustments, but start the compensation for changes, and knowing that you might have to ratchet it up more, or if things start looking better, you might be able to, you know, predict a better outcome.
The other thing I think that's not, probably not unique to the sport, but important to us, is we're diversified in terms of our income stream. So we have, you know, a lot of, we've got a RV park, we've got a retail center, we've got revenue from recreational fishermen, revenue from commercial fishermen. So we've got a little better situation, I think, than some places do, and that we've got some flexibility, I guess. Probably we've got resilience to downturns and certain things like the shrimp, for example.
So we think green?
Yeah. Awesome. Before we go on, can we take 5 minutes?
Absolutely.
You want to eat?
Yeah.
Let's get a sandwich.
Sandwiches, chips, assorted, sodas, water.
Room's dark.
Yeah. That's perfect, because I'm hungry too.
Help
There's
yourself.
Sandwiches for
There's
everybody. We
so
buy
much.
Subway, so don't let it go to waste.
Yeah.
Get up and eat.
Please.
Richard,
he's
just meeting lunches. Aren't you,
Richard?
You got to enjoy
well,
the first one.
Richard's
you
a good leader because all of us are starving and no one was going to say
yeah,
anything.
I have.
Yeah.
Not too bad. Just got to understand the range is doing better.
And Dave, we went to Newport for a roundtable meeting. Oh, they're having another one. It's a working lunch.
Yeah, yeah.
Danielle, do you have a code or a further? For what's on the written on?
No, it's a mystery.
No, it is kind of a mystery.
Mystery sandwich.
Because what I ordered and what I got were kind of two different things. So they say it on the.
So if you don't like what you get, trade with your neighbor.
Yeah.
Oh. You find what you like.
Take a bite and wrap it back up.
Yeah.
Like the chocolate.
Well, there's plenty. So if you get something you don't like, don't be afraid to get something else. There's so much.
You get your veggie.
Yeah, I got my veggie sandwich.
Are you vegetarian?
I am.
Yes,
I have been for 32 years of my life. Yeah,
really?
Crazy.
You want my lettuce?
It really hurts. You know where to have it from.
Thank you.
Well, I didn't want to go in the dark room with too many people. I'd get scared.
It looks like 30.
It's like what?
Oh, don't forget there's cookies.
30 OE. I'm not sure.
Just going about the way you
want. Yep. Yeah, absolutely. It's more about seeing people talk back and forth and listen and comment and stuff. I like that. I've been places where people talk at each other, but they're not listening. That's not good. And so this keeps me going in my job because the negative aspect of my job is if somebody's not listening, you're not going to go anywhere with it.
I think you're hearing a lot of why we work well.
That's awesome. Probably also helps new people coming on board seeing that. That's all good.
You don't want that, Larry. I'll take it.
They were in there. I'm sorry. That's so dark.
We don't know, Sharon.
Thanks,
Danielle.
That might be roast beef.
Eat one of each.
This is for 10 people, so.
Oh, that's a lot.
It's a lot.
I don't know, that's oil and fancy, not really their panning, the rust it all there.
Oil, oh, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
So are you going back up to Newport on, in May, the first, what is it? Whatever, for the next round table?
Danielle.
No, I think I'm right with that.
They really didn't do that much, you know?
I don't want to.
Right now, I'm trying to fight my refrigeration.
You are the smart one of the group, you got yourself a nasty.
Dave says he's gonna go.
I get it working, that's the last of the.
Dan, are you gonna have to?
No, I don't normally eat one. We're looking like this.
There are also room for water.
We don't know how it goes.
And I did leave you a napkin.
You're welcome.
Very scores of the month, yeah? No, I don't know if anybody even wanted, I heard there was a couple of them, they split out, wherever they came down was what I heard, but I haven't heard anything.
I'm gonna have Subway sandwich in a while, this is good.
That's what we were thinking when we ordered them the other day. Even Subway's open, I looked today, 8 a.m. till 11 p.m.
All right, let's get back at it.
Good call, Richard. I'm hungry.
So this next topic is a tough one.
Budget? Budget and finance, that's my favorite.
Ugh. Really?
As fire chief, Roy Mapp would always get you into the stadium, but my financial person would always get you into the box seat. So, budget and finance, consistency in budgeting to meet needs refers to the board's ability to develop realistic, credible annual budgets for successful operations. And so talk a little bit about your budget process. How do you develop your annual budget? The reliability of the budget you produce and how well the process works for you.
So, when I took this job, one of the first things and my biggest fear was putting out a budget. I'd never done one. I've kind of always been involved with putting in my thoughts, my ideas, you know, and what I thought should be in there, especially from a Harvard Master's point of view, you know, maintenance operations and, you know, what our needs actually out there were. Putting that down on paper and budget form that is kind of difficult to follow and make sense of until you've done it a couple times. Like we said, April started her position almost simultaneously with me. I think she kind of ran into the same thing. We kind of knew what funding we needed, where we needed it, but getting it actually put down on paper in a presentable form has been a challenge for us to do. How we go through our budget, you know, on a 2 weeks, every 2 weeks, maybe with the latest a month, looking at our budget performance, seeing where we're at, how we're doing on our budget, what we might be spending too much on, and then using previous year's budgets to help kind of forecast what has been done. And then, you know, as we've taken over these roles, it's been a little bit easier because we know what's coming. We know the newer things and where we have to add add more monies and take away from things. So again, that's a big round table discussion as far as staffing wise goes, is trying to capture all the needs from office expenses to, you know, capital projects, and what are, with our staff, what we're actually able to do, you know, what you're going to have to contract out. You know, with our coming up budget, we have a lot more FEMA projects. You know, we have a lot more bigger projects that we're focusing on. So the smaller projects, you know, or other infrastructure maintenance things, you know, we might not be able to get to as many of those. So just trying to forecast, I guess, what we see coming, you know, changes that have happened in the past, price increases, inflation, you know, and how is that actually affect us, and, you know, what those rates need to be. We get a lot of that, like I said, probably from looking back on previous years, where we've been, where the money was spent, and then trying to see the future things coming and what might be changing.
I think, too, because we have such a small staff and we do work intermingled with one another every day, all day, I think that helps us when we're looking at our budget. We know what's going on. We know because we're hands-on. If there's something in the RV park, one of us has seen it in person, hands-on. Hey, we've got a problem here. We need to work it into our upcoming budget. I think a lot of, you know, us being so small and working so close together, we know what needs maintenance. We know what needs repair. We know, we kind of have a good idea of what's upcoming because we've seen it. We've put eyes on it on a daily basis. So I think that, sure, we could have a bigger staff, but at the same time, we also are very involved with what's going on for budgeting.
Yeah, and with the tight budget, you know, I would say we have a lot of oversight on what gets spent. You know, there's no real rogue spenders out there that, you know, has, you know, a dedicated amount and they're just going to go out and spend, you know, as it is. You know, we, if there's a PO wrote in our office, everybody knows that a PO is wrote and we're spending money on something. So it's, you know, it goes back to forecasting what's coming. You know, as I said, with the shrimp season not happening, you know, we've dramatically reduced how much fuel sales we're going to have. You know, our landing fees, you know, that those are all going to go down, and making sure that you're putting into a realistic picture of what you're forecasting for the year. And after all that being said, a budget is your best guess estimate, you know, what you think is going to come. And then, you know, there's times you have to do a supplemental budget, you know, change things that were kind of unforeseen that you thought. But making sure you know the steps of how to get to that, not overspending before you do a supplemental budget, you know, making those changes, and then using that information to help create your next budget. You're keeping everything kind of in line with the reality that's happening.
So how about for the board, the annual process you go through? How do you like that?
Well, here's the beginning.
It's
so
wonderful.
We have this in our hand, and our meeting is not until end of May or early June.
May 7th.
Okay. So we get a look at it. I'm going to spill over into the other one too. But
that's fine.
I think this port has historically had budget problems. Significant budget problems, which is why we owe not much money right now. But I really like the way the court has organized their budget by resource source, if you will, and broken it down into where the money comes from and then how it's expended. So if we have, you know, RV revenue and work on the RV park, then those are in that budget, in that section. So there's no black hole where stuff goes to die. There's a purpose for what's going on. I came out of state government, so I used to give care of my budget. So when I looked at this one, I thought, looks like it's right on track for me, for the way we would have done it before.
So it's organized by RV park, mortgage, commercial?
Yeah, marina, RV park, fuel dock, and commercial retail. Those are your resources.
Our revenue center.
Our revenues, and everything, basically, all expenses and, you know, costs come from those resources. That's what we work off for. And, you know, we do get money, you know, tax money, which is $270,000-ish is what we figure on there, but that is just absorbed into our general fund for operating.
Cool. Nice way to do it and understand kind of how the money flows and stuff. It also helps people managing those areas. You get to see the results of what impacts and ideas you have.
And one of the things that I've seen with, not that I've seen a lot of budgets, but making sure the general public can understand what you're doing. I mean, what I've seen, you can make a budget very, very complicated and very hard to follow if you're not fluent in budget criteria. But, you know, trying to, I wouldn't say dumb it down, but make sure you're not overstating things or rambling on too much in your budget statements. Keep it clean. Keep it to the point of what we are focusing on for that year.
Yeah, Oregon budget, LB form, is not intuitive to the average person on the street. And so LB forms are not your checkbook, and they don't work like your checkbook does. And that's the problem with how the state makes you budget.
It took me a very, and I still don't agree with how those numbers come up, but it
but
took
revenue centers is easy for people to understand.
Exactly.
And they show the money in, money out, and here's what happens.
Yep.
Well, I think that also helps us a great deal in planning,
mm-hmm.
because then you can, you know, figure out where you're going to put stuff. We also have in our budget process, we have citizens, five people
yep.
on our budget committee who
yep.
help us in that. That helps at least a few people know what's going on.
Yep, that's why Oregon does it that way. Again, that transparency for how things work and stuff. And so it sounds like you're happy with the process and the dialogue that goes on. One of the things I always ask is, do you have a five-year financial plan? So that looks 5 years in the future.
Our strategic business plan kind of looks over what the goals are that we want, you know, how we want things to play out and look, and we do update that annually for changes. One of the things that we, like I said before, a lot of our funding and projects are stemmed from federal money,
yep.
state money, grants, and depending on if those we get the grants or if we get the assistance or if something took a lot longer, like what we're seeing with the hazard mitigation grant program. I mean, that's something that we've been working on for 6 years, and I just found out another review could take almost up to 2 years. So, you know, looking at those and making those adjustments to our strategic plan, capital projects, all, you know, everything that we're forecasting, as things get put off or done, is trying to figure out something we can replace that with that might be doable, and just have that constant update of where things are at. So when you're dealing with the federal money, things can get pretty unpredictable at where they're going to be. And I think the only way you compensate for that is constantly making adjustments and updates.
Where I was going with that, and it sounds like in a way you're doing it, is as a decision maker, the decisions that you make, which obviously there's financial impact for some of those, the only true way to see that impact is looking 3 to 5 years down the road. And so we want to add staffing here. Looking 3 and 5 years down the road, you can see if you can really afford that or if it's going to make you go dive in and stuff. And so there's a lot of folks that look at their budget 1 year at a time. And so that's why 8 years or so ago, Scott Lazenby was the city manager of Lake Oswego at the time. Got the Oregon law to change so they could do a biannual budget. So you're looking at 2 years. So that starts getting your nose underneath the tent for those hidden costs. So again, I work with firefighters. They only think 1 year at a time. And so we're going to buy this really cool thing. Well, you're not thinking about the annual maintenance on this. You're not thinking about having to replace it after its service life. You're not thinking about all of these things that have to be built into the equation. That's where this future plan looks at. So your docks have a life. And at some point in time, they have to be on a planet that they're getting upgraded and stuff. And so those things have to be captured and you're looking at as opposed to, over the next 5 years, we have 15 docks that have to be replaced, and it's going to be $20 million to do this. And so we got to figure out how to find the money. And so you don't want to be in that place as opposed to, yeah, we put money aside for infrastructure improvements. We put money aside for this and that type of stuff.
That's been one of the goals we've been trying. We've always been trying to get to that point to where, you know, you look at it, this is the, you know, funding that we're going to need. What we often find is like, okay, we can't afford the new docks, so what can we afford? How long can we prolong the life of the stuff
yep.
that we have? So it's putting, you know, I guess to that, it's putting money away for, you know, dock maintenance, you know, new boards, sending staff down to just keep prolonging what it is, while on the backside, you're continuing to look for grants, opportunities that will work for us, and, you know, with that being said, you're always looking at, okay, is this even an opportunity that we can do? Matching funds, you know, almost for something that comes with every project. And can we afford that? Where is those matching funds going to come from? We kind of have that going right now with an EPA grant we have for a wastewater treatment plant. Well, that was an appropriations bill from Peter DeFazio. Like, here's your $3.5 million. Oh, by the way, you're going to need $875,000 for matching funds. So it's like, how are we going to deal with that? So it's knowing what you're getting yourself into and developing a plan and trying not to get yourself signed on the dotted line before you can see it through. Some of the other things that we've done like that is our travel list, telehandlers, new pickup trucks, is trying to weigh, okay, do we spend the $30,000 right now on a new truck, or are we going to spend $40,000 in repairs over the next, you know, 7 years? And trying to think about your purchases and where your funding is going to come from. And typically, we don't always have the money to make these purchases. So a lot of what you're talking about is really shook out with a loan for our travelers. You know, you got to make a plan. You know, how are you going to pay for this over the course of its life, and then how are we going to maintain it? And then use that to start establishing, okay, we already kind of got ourselves in trouble once needing one and had to go through this. So how are we going to set money aside for, you know, new equipment and replacement down the road, mm-hmm. which is not driving everything you have directly into the ground and saying, I need a brand new one. You know, trading things in, repurposing things to the best you can and knowing your limits when you need to stop and go a different direction.
Another issue that is kind of budget and operations both is that we employ the services of some contractors mm-hmm. to help us with the professional stuff, engineering, legal advice, those sort of things. And, you know, I think that's a pretty good stroke for us to do that because we have somebody on hand to help us with emerging issues. And, of course, legal coverage, you know, we don't always know where we're going to be challenged. so we've taken, you know, look carefully at that sort of thing, too. And rather than trying to add more staff, I think it makes more sense to do it that way and say, okay, let's see.
Staff is forever. Yeah. Subcontractor is here and gone. Yeah. So feel green on that. Okay. And so how about soundness of financial practices, the effectiveness of the district's financial management and the board's basic philosophy on fiscal matters. And so, as a board, how would you describe your approach to fiscal management? I know it's not carefree. I know it's not casual. So would we say conservative or frugal? And what policies and procedures do you have in place to keep the board informed of the district's financial health? And we've covered that aspect already. And so fiscal philosophy, what I'm getting from or what I hear is things are explained adequately to us. We understand what we need to do. We want to do the best we can, but we need to pay our debt down. And so, because when the debt's gone, then there's more money to go to operations. So we got to address our debt issue. And we can't do everything. And so what we're doing, we just got to kind of understand the critical pathway so that we're spending money once. We don't want to spend money twice that, okay, yeah, we did this project, but now we're doing this, and so we have to rip this up now and redo everything. You don't want to spend money twice if you can.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, we're doing that in some cases as a legacy. I would call our, at least my philosophy here, and I think it's true, is we're realistic about budgeting and how, I mean, everything that Travis brings us and April brings us is grounded in reality and says, okay, here's what you can actually do, probably. And some of the things that he mentioned, you know, there's things shift and they change, but I don't think that from a budgetary standpoint, we've gone out and said, you know, let's do a pie in the sky sort of thing. It's all based on reality. What might happen? What can we do? What are the charges actually going to be? And even aware that there are some things we can't foresee that are going to change our life.
Oh, yeah.
From a fiscal perspective.
You're doing great.
I think the staff does a wonderful job with the budget. And when I first came on a board, we didn't used to meet here. We met down at the hotel. And there was really no budget because there was no money. The bills were not being paid. I mean, the state was just the size of bills. I mean, we were not on good terms with them at all. And so, and the room was packed with people because the people were upset. That's when they come, when they're upset. So anyway, we changed the support manager, brought him on, and he totally turned this sport around. And Travis continues to work with him during that time and still is working with him. And he was very good at finance. They spent many hours going to the state, meeting with the people, convincing them that we want to do the right thing and get on the right board with them, and that what they have done is completely turned our court around financially. And we are respected again. And that's because the staff and the management did that. And we did have a couple of board commissioners that actually went along and met with representatives as well. I mean, our board, since the boards have changed, our board has changed, our board is a working board. We work. We work for the people here and for the staff. It was a lot. It was sad.
So, sounds like from the history, is definitely don't want to go back to that.
No, anymore. I don't believe we will.
And the positive of that history is there's clear communication on the financial status.
Total transparency.
And,
yeah.
And have embraced the budget process with the commissioners and the five at-large public members that make the budget every year.
Mm-hmm.
I would go on to say most of it's just, most of it stems from transparency. You know, what happened before, I mean, you might show up, and this was your meeting packet, one page. Bullet items, this is it, no real backup information, financial statements that just said and not really ever reviewed or checked. Because some of the financial problems we were in, not only was the port manager doing it, but the board didn't say anything about it. They just kind of just assumed, well, it's fine. But, you know, having people that care about their accountability to the public and what's happening out here also just helps keep a nice fluent process in here of, hey, this looks not the way it should be looking. You know, we're getting outside, what are we going to do to fix it? And not letting the little bleeders turn into major ones.
I think it's also helpful that we get to sign the check. And that sounds silly, but I learn more from signing checks about the finances of this port than almost anything else.
Well, absolutely.
It was a surprise when we would sign checks with little $1,000 for certain things, and I went, I didn't know this cost that much. I didn't even know we were paying that.
Yeah.
You know, in the financial report, until you see it on a check, you go, oh, it's a real deal.
Sometimes when I would ask the city manager, I had to sign checks.
And
the finance people hated me because I asked questions on every single one.
I try to make myself available whenever they come in to sign checks. If you have any questions, anything looks.
And you hear them, don't you?
What's that?
You hear some.
I do.
Come with waving at them. What is this all about?
Yeah. But each check has an invoice with it, and we can review it, and we know what it is. And if we're not sure exactly what that company is or what those things are, because we don't know every single thing that you purchase, but we always get an answer.
And it comes from, I encourage questions. Please ask as many as you can, because I can tell you if I don't have an answer, something's wrong. You know, we should have answers for every single dollar that's coming out of here, and, you know, asking those questions holds us accountable too for what we're spending money on.
Awesome. You're making my job easy today. So we're down to customer relations. And so the first one is management of service problems and customer communication. And so that's, to me, pretty self-explanatory. So talk a little bit about the kinds of service problems you encounter and how your district deals with them. And how do your customers know about what's going on at the district? And do you guys do any outreach for communications to people here or anything like that? Just let me know if you do anything like that.
Just the website.
Okay.
The website. We don't have a newspaper.
Yeah, outreach, so the website is a great source of information for what's happening here. We try and keep all of our forms, pricing, you know, everything that we possibly can, update meetings, the meeting packets, all that. We try and do that. As far as stemming too much off of there, you know, I hear other places and some, you know, do you have the Facebook? A Facebook and or an Instagram or anything. And to me, that is nothing but a platform for people to complain on. We have a public meeting that's open for you to come in and voice your opinion, but outreach I'm cautious about. You know, I want people to know the good things. I want people to know that if there's issues they have, our port office is open. My phone number, everybody I think has, and feel free to call. But not trying not to give too many platforms for people to express all their feelings on, kind of unfiltered.
Well, as we know, we encounter the same people a lot. No matter what it is, they complain. So
yeah, complaints that we get are from, you know, cars parking in the launch ramp that don't have a trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Parking my permit space without a permit?
That's right.
You know, overnight parking. Really, and those I think are relatively easy ones to work your way through. You know, explain to them.
Streetlights are too bright.
You know, those are relatively easy things that we have. I would say when people actually have a voice or a concern with a problem, this is the area they know they can come. I think public knows a port has public meetings. If you have an issue, you can come to the public meeting and have your opportunity to say it. And like what Richard said, we're pretty, you know, kind of the rules of, you know, public comments are you let them say their comment and you let them sit down. I think we kind of go the extra mile. We try to address what they're saying, at least have an answer, or that, you know, we don't have an answer for you, but we will get back to you. You know, I encourage everything. If there is a problem, if there's an issue that's happening, please come. We have forms for people to fill out for incident reports or what is the other form called? It's like an FYI or something like that.
Okay, complaint
form. A complaint form, yeah. Sorry, that's
online.
What I was looking for.
And they're online as well.
Yeah, and we openly take those in, and you know, they're carefully reviewed. And if there is a legitimate issue or a concern going on out there, taking it seriously and fixing it, applying that, we've done a really good job at that, and I think people do know it. People do talk. You know, when you come down to the port, this port is one of the most traveled places, I think, in the entire county. We have 500,000 cars that go through our RV park alone every year. People walk around our port basins every time. So when those issues, when they're walking or they see a tripping hazard that could possibly be there or anything like that, they know they can come to us. And I think we get a lot of positive feedback on it because we listen to what they say, you know, take into consideration what they're saying and see if there's something we can do about it to help fix it.
Another thing we do that's kind of along those lines is several of us belong to the local STEP organization or fishing group here, and we report out at every meeting because it happens to be on the same day as this meeting. We report out to the public what we've talked about and where the port's going to kind of spread a little word there.
Port report.
Well, it sounds like from when we first started, all five board members are kind of the PR person for the board in your respective circles that you associate with. And so you share information that way. Powerful thing is somebody comes in and has a complaint on something and staff takes care of it. They see it. So
thank you.
You know, that's boom. Here you go. It's done. I've read your website. I've looked at your website and stuff. And is there the old-fashioned bulletin board or anything like around here that people sell stuff on or whatever?
In front of our office, we have two bulletin boards.
Okay. Yeah, it's been districts, fire districts do newsletters, have open houses, things like that. A port is a little different animal than a lot of that, and you have a tremendous amount of transient people through the area, I mean, which is big, and that's an impact on everybody. So.
And also a very difficult one to navigate because the outcry of what's happening, you know, what they're wanting to where you can actually apply are usually two very different things.
Well, somebody traveling through the area versus somebody that lives in the area is going to have two different perspectives on things.
Yes. Yeah.
So you got to kind of know where the people are coming from.
I think we also do a pretty good job of trying to help manage their expectations by talking to them to make them let them know that, look, you know, we'd all like that sort of thing, but it just isn't going to happen. And so I think we try and introduce a little realism to everybody that we can, to make sure they understand that, you know, we can't go down and pave that road down there at the RV parks, even though it's full of potholes, because it's going to cost us an awful lot of money to do that. And there's nobody to help us with that. It's not a state road, it's not a county road, it's our road. And so, you know, we're looking at $500,000 to go fix that. So how would you rather us spend that money?
Yeah.
You know, so those kind of things.
Yeah, a lot of the public, they don't understand that Port doesn't have a lot of cash that they can just go and do that. They think, well, you're the port, you ought to be able to pave it, you know, and
we are one
branch. They have no idea.
One branch of government that doesn't print our own money, so we're kind of
stuck
there.
There's a process.
Cool. All right. So now we're on to improvements to customer service. And so this refers to the board's level of awareness and action taken on needed upgrades, improvements, and the operation to provide quality service to their customers. In your efforts to continue providing quality service to your customers, what kinds of improvements are you making or would you like to make that would better serve the public? And so it sounds like you have a system in place where you're communicating and stuff, but is there, you know, again, you may not be able to afford it, but is there something that you would like that would help improve things? Is there a tool or something?
A tool to use to figure that information out?
Yeah.
I wouldn't say we necessarily have a tool or a running document, but we do know where our tourism, where our people that come here go to, how they get here. One of the things that I've always wanted, and I think all the public really wants, is sidewalks and street lighting, more access for people to have safe access getting here. Mm-hmm. You know, those things are not necessarily something that we're always talking about, but where, especially where we spend money, that we haven't seen returns on travel lodging tax money. You know, those are things that we contribute to that will be overall beneficial to the public. And we don't, like I said, we don't really have a tool for it, but it's something that we contribute to that we want to also hold the county, you know, responsible for putting that money back into the port for the better use of the citizens and the users.
So sidewalk, streetlights, so more like a multinodal path. So bicycles, things like that, people
yeah.
could
better access from throughout the port.
Non-pervious paved services.
Yes.
And there's a program that kind of languished. I was really interested. OSU has a dock walk program where we would enlist the help of local fishermen to have a place where they could tie their boat up and allow the public to come on and explain what they fish for, how they fish,
oh, wow.
where they fish, when they fish. I haven't pursued it since COVID, but I know that's out there, and for the community, I would love to do that, because that helps put a face to who's fishing. It also helps them understand there's a lot of boats down there. What do they do? They don't all do the same thing by any stretch of imagination. To me, it would be very helpful if we could put something like that together. Bring the public here and say, this is your port, here's what's going on in it.
Yeah.
These are the businesses that operate here. And I haven't pursued that. We've kind of let that go for a while now. But I know it's been done in the past, and OSU would help facilitate that.
And just volunteers?
Well, we would have to go around and talk to the fleet and say, you know, Joe, would you mind tying your boat up here and letting people get on it?
Oh.
And, you know, explain to them what you fish for, how you fish, those kind of things.
Too tall.
Exactly.
His boat's too tall.
Well.
You can't have to climb.
We'll figure that kind of stuff out.
There you go.
You need a ladder.
On that note, we are planning. I feel really bad because I can't remember what company, which division she's from, but we are putting together something for, I think it was Oregon Sea Grant, but they have been asking to come down and do public tours of fishing boats toward July, end of July, August, to do something like that. And it would be during, I think it's the Bigfoot Blues Festival that we're having. So it will attract, we will already have tourism here to get people down on the docks more. I know I've done tours for the school, had homeschooling kids and high school kids, graduating high school kids that are just experiencing other job opportunities, as well as with the fish processing plant, ice house, cold storage. Josh Whaley's been very helpful for that. He doesn't mind having people come down on his boat. And it kind of captures a lot of the fishing industry, you know, when you go to those bigger boats. Now that I have a little more time to put these together, I'm going to try and line up something more along the lines of bigger commercial boats, you know, your smaller day fishers, and then like a charter boat type thing so they can see the whole thing and be able to ask questions during that. And that's one of the things that we're working on right now, trying to get more people to understand what we do down here.
We also met with Wheels of America. About a week or so ago, we had them down to go through what people who are in a chair or in a scooter, what they can do in the port, what's accessible to the people who can't walk the dock. So we met with them and, you know, tried to give their report or what the article they were writing, some feedback on other things that other people can do at the port of Brookings. Mm-hmm. So we try to.
I like talking about our port. Any chance I get tours,
anything like
that.
We try to keep our
like
customer
that.
Base as wide as we can, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
And a lot of this fits into what we tell the public anytime they're here is that this is a working port. This isn't a yacht harbor. This is a working port, so there's going to be boats coming and going. There will be noise. There will be odor at times. There will be bright lights at night. That's the features of a working port. And that's why this port exists, is to service those kind of industries. And so come on down and find out about it. And that's been an issue since we've had newer residents move here who weren't exactly thrilled with the notion of living across the river, looking down at a working port. So they've been here, and that's what we told them, this is a working port. So I think this would all help facilitate their understanding of that if we could, you know, do a few outreach things.
Cool. On to personnel administration. I think we know the answer to this one. Staff morale and work climate refers to what sometimes is called the culture of the organization, the quality, health of the work environment, whether it's considered a good place to work. As a board, how would you describe the level of staff morale and the quality of the workplace environment?
Excellent.
It seems that you have long-term employees. Probably have it already have your answer.
I'll give you a simple answer. I would like to work here.
That field staff and the office staff, they're all great. They all work good together, and they're always pleasant to us. Always.
Most of the time.
We have to.
Most of the time. They're pleasant to me. They work hard.
Yeah, I've not heard any staff complain or
no.
bicker between each other, and they're always supportive of us and each other. And
yes.
Seems outstanding. I don't know what happens behind closed doors.
Well, the port has kind of historically always had, I don't really know why it really wasn't, we used to have a high turnover rate, but the port itself has set itself in a stance where it takes care of its employees. We have good benefits. We have good paying jobs, good latitude for what we're doing as long as we're within, you know, the scope of what we're supposed to be doing. So you know, from a worker standpoint, I mean, you're pretty well taken care of, especially for the jobs that we're doing, from, you know, bathrooms and garbages all the way up to equipment operating. We always joke around a little bit about it, but it's, you know, I challenge you to go find a job in our area that's going to pay you and give you the benefits and the latitude that you have here. So I, you know, and that's part of keeping your staff too, is making sure you don't give them too much of a reason to leave. So that's one thing the port's always set itself up for, is the ability to retain employees.
Well, I think you guys all respect each other.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm? Totally. And your performances are awesome. Guys go way beyond.
Yeah, I mean, we do our performance reviews, you know, review of job descriptions, make sure that you're working within your job description. So, you know, we do go out above and beyond to make sure our employees are comfortable. Not too comfortable.
Provide good training.
Good training.
Provide good training.
Yes.
Yeah, all types of training. Safety training.
And the ability to, you know, move up within for what you can in a small organization and be able to kind of take the next step from a smaller forklift to our bigger forklift, our telehandler, you know, and making sure those opportunities exist for them.
So we kind of got into this one, management of employee performance. So annual performance reviews are conducted and documented at various levels in the organization. So let's talk a little bit about the performance review practices, the format, how the reviews are conducted, how current are they, and your satisfaction with the process.
We did our staff performance reviews a month and a half ago. The format of the review came from Monica over at SCAO. I spent some time talking with her, and she sent us some samples, and we took from the conversation and the samples she gave us, and we made our own for each of our staff, and then the board does Travis's review.
That's
so
right.
I'll let you guys talk on that, but that's where our employee performance.
So is that the first time it's been done?
Under us,
the first year we did it, it was, everybody was kind of all over the place. But in the back of our head, I mean, I know we kept on talking about, like, we got to do this. And I think we finally settled into enough that they will be consistent. In the past, they've been consistent. You know, our previous manager did them with us every year. We review job descriptions, you know, we make sure everybody's working within, the performance reviews, in my eyes, they're meant to be good things. You know, I'm not here too much to tell you anything you're doing wrong, but I want to listen to you and feel how, and get a feel for how you feel, you know, what we're doing, what we have them doing, and making sure they're comfortable with what's going on. If there is an issue that needs to be addressed, yes, we might address it, but I'm kind of a pretty firm believer that if there is an issue of performance, it shouldn't be brought up once a year. You know, it should be brought up as it's happening, while it's happening, and documenting that versus saving it for a performance review or a critique at that one particular time when it could have happened a long time ago and never has been happening, or it continues to happen and waiting for that. It's just not a good practice for us.
Yeah, it's part and parcel. Annual reviews are a must. Annual reviews, when they're conducted, should not be a surprise to the person getting it,
right,
or the person giving it. And it's an opportunity to review the job description at the same time to make sure everybody's still operating between the lines. From a performance management aspect, I give an evaluation almost every day I'm working with them. And and it's, you know, hey, you're doing great doing here, you're doing great doing here. And if somebody gives me something I don't want, I sit them down and we have an adult conversation. You're not giving me what I want, and this is what I want, and this is how you're going to get there. And if they're not getting there, then we go to a performance improvement plan. And if their annual evaluation comes up in that time, there's just a mention of the performance improvement plan and we're working through the process. Or if they completed the performance improvement plan and they're doing everything right, that will still be referenced in the evaluation that, hey, we went on a performance improvement plan, you're up to the standard that we want, and everything's fine. You know, and that's how that goes. It's a lot on the manager's aspect of doing it, but in the long run, you got happy, productive employees, and nobody dreads the word performance evaluation.
Right.
Because it's almost continually going on all the time. And so it's the Royism that I always have. The greatest reward I have is working with people, and the biggest fear I have is working with people, because the adult conversations can be very uncomfortable. But you do enough of them.
We give Travis the opportunity to, because we talk to him annually as well, and he can choose public or not public.
Yep.
So he's chosen to do not public, which I like, because that lets us figure things out and get to have the adult conversation.
Yep.
We really have never had to have one of those.
Oh.
But I think it's, from my perspective, it's worked well. And I think we've gotten feedback, and I think that's a productive process.
Well, it's good to hear that Monica helped you guys out to get where you want. And so the assignment and position and work assignments, if you've been going through the job descriptions and stuff, my assumption is you're all in alignment or have made adjustments, or, hey, you don't have proper training for that, you need to step back.
Right.
Yep.
There's constant, you know, look at our what we have our employees doing. Granted, all of our employees do have a fairly broad job description. There's not a lot of us. There's a lot of port to cover. So, you know, but that also reflects in, like we were talking before, in their pay, the benefits that we offer is that, you know, their job descriptions can be fairly broad, but with having safety personnel here, you know, and having these conversations, the training comes with it. So, you know, they're earning every bit of what they get to keep up with their job descriptions. And that during that annual time, it's time we look through it, make sure we're hitting on there. And then a lot of times we'll look at the next level job description, compare and contrast them, and at least let them know where the next level is for them and what duties will change with that.
And so then, are they also given guidance on here's what you can do to make yourself a better candidate for that position if it opens up?
We do. We do go over that. Like I said, there's just not a whole lot of wiggle room when you have the same staff, you know, and you have everybody here for a long time. You kind of end up really tightening yourself into it. And with our budget constraints that we have, there's not a lot of extra money for personnel services. But if, you know, moving them up, you know, some of our, you know, bathrooms and garbages, you know, it's like, well, we can throw in equipment operating, you know, we can get you forklift training, you know, and get you out there with a forklift operator, you know, that's been doing that before, and just slowly work your way into it. I've done the same thing because I used to do almost all of it, and I've had to retrain and move people up into different maintenance positions to cover for those, but, you know, it takes time. And, you know, a lot of the equipment operating we do, it's not just for us. You know, there's a lot of people you're picking up and putting down, you know, things on boats that's their livelihood. So the learning curve, we tend to drag out a little bit longer to make sure they're comfortable with it. And it gives us time to properly budget for it to make sure we can give them the raises when they're needed.
Okay. You've got about 12 more minutes until 2 o'clock.
Yep. We'll get there. We're coming down the home stretch. Because I'm pretty sure I know the answer to these last three.
They're good.
So we're into policies and procedures. And so soundness of administrative policies. As a board, how comfortable are you with the general condition of the relevant policies in the organization, their accuracy, and how current and complete they are? And so it sounds like you're pretty current on everything that you, that's the impression that I had from all the discussions that we've been having. That
yes, we are current with our policies.
Do you do like an annual review or every couple of 3 years?
Almost a monthly or 3 month review of, looking back at what we've done in previous meetings, what's happened. Because like I said, I mean, there's so many out there. We have a policy book. And, we'll go through, it's one thing our previous manager did really well. He went through every single one of our policies and went down it, and we were doing 3 to 4 policy updates a month for about a year until we were caught back up to what we needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And now we just kind of, we look back over it, see if there's been any changes and try and make those updates small instead of to really big ones like what we used to do. Mm-hmm. So I would say we are, and it's just a constant constant update and a constant review to make sure you're adhering to it. Some policies, they still work for, for the last 5 years, they still work, but many of them don't.
Seems like every year you guys have employee handbook policies
employee
changing
handbook.
Constantly.
Employment policies, yeah.
Yes.
It is changing, and like I said, we just try it. As they come to us, we do them, get them to the board, talk about it, approve them, and start applying them.
So then the next question is how is our match between what the policy says and what people actually do?
For the most part, we're pretty good. There's, there's still some things, as our job duties and how we operate and function as a port start to change a little bit, that maybe we need to look at them a little bit harder. But for the most part, we are very consistent with what we do. But I would say over the last 2 to 3 years, ever since the pandemic happened, things changed relatively, really quickly, quicker than what they used to. So there's definitely still things to dig into and constantly keep looking at to see what does need to be updated. But I'd say overall, our policies are consistent with what we do.
Okay. And the last one is efficiency of staff and work systems.
Mm-hmm.
Refers generally to the overall effectiveness of the organization in terms of balance between resources allocated and outcomes achieved. And what I'm hearing very positive from the board is we have a small staff that accomplishes a whole bunch of stuff.
They do.
And so what I'm hearing is the staff performance is very high that allows them to achieve more than what you think the resources would allow them to achieve.
I'd also point out that they do that under some pretty difficult conditions. This is not a great environment to work outside in, but they're out there doing it. I've watched them respond to a sinking boat, for example, where it's all hands on deck. Everybody shows up, kind of knows what to do, and gets the job done and, solve the problem. So I think it's, from what I've seen, it's a very responsive, very efficient way of doing business. I can't say enough about what goes on down here.
Agreed. They're called on weekends, nights. They do storm drain cleaning, regular toilet drain cleaning, pumping out stuff. Whatever needs to be done, they do it. They do it when it needs to be done, and they do it in as efficient manner as they can with the funds and equipment they have available.
Thank you.
Boils down to this is a great staff.
Awesome. So does anybody have anything else they want to add? Let's see, I got 6 minutes.
On it.
That's good.
I think this is a good.
It's good to have the discussion.
It's good to have the discussion because, it's easy to say, well, how's everything going? You're like, oh, it's going good. But this kind of helps break down the different structures of the port and at least makes you think a little bit more about where you're actually at and your knowledge and know-how of what you're doing.
So within a week, and so this is Wednesday, so in Roy's world by Friday, I will have a summary to the both of you to take a look at.
Okay.
And if you're good with it, then I'll send it to my boss, and she puts in a PDF and all that stuff, and I'll send you the final. And then Danielle, hear from me 60 days from now, and it's just to say, hey, did you guys talk about board practices assessment? And basically what the board practice summary will be is, you guys are doing a great job. You're a rarity from my experience in the state with the amount of conversations that you have back and forth, the relationships you have with your chief executive and stuff. And all of that is super, super positive stuff. Because these relationships here help deliver everything further to the people in the port. And so my port of Newport, I did the board there, same relationship and stuff. And you really see it for me as somebody using the service. You see it in all the people that you come in contact with, you know, and that's a cool thing. And it's nice to, here's a person working here, and you can come up with a question, and they have a, you know, they're happy when they talk to you, and not in a bad mood or something like that. And so that's pretty important, especially, you know, for me, I pay money to be there, so I would like to be treated like a human being. You know?
Absolutely. We do pride ourselves on that. We are respectful to everybody and courteous and answer questions to the best of our ability. And if you don't have an answer, we will be sure to get back to you.
Yeah. I appreciate your guys' time today. I know there's other fun things to do, especially when the rare sun is out here. I say I had a beautiful drive down here. I mean, it was awesome. It was really awesome.
You picked a great day.
Yeah. No, it was, I had about halfway down here, I was like, God, I wish I would have rode my motorcycle. But
yeah.
Then I looked at the temperature, and it said 31 degrees. It's like, God, I'm glad I'm in the car.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank
very
you.
Nice to meet you guys.
You too as well.
Thank you.
Well, following our agenda, there are no public comments.
No.
Our next regular meeting will be Wednesday, May 15th, 2024 at 2 p.m. in this room. And we will adjourn the special meeting.
Goodbye.
Bye. Great.